VanWe Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWe Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWe.
And I'm Adam VanWe.
And we are here, as always, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, live in the studio. The reason we do that live every day, every week, is because you have the ability to provide some input. So if you just want to listen to us yak about the things we want to talk about, that's fine. But if you would rather talk about something important to you, have any financial questions, observations, or whatever, just pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255. It's 222-TALK, which sounds like I'm stuttering, but I'm not. 222-TALK.
All right.
If I can raise a smile like that out of him, it makes my morning. All right, here we are in May, and there's an old expression in the market that says, sell in May and go away. I don't think it's particularly good advice, but a lot of people must be following it because there's been some selling going on in the month of May. I don't think it's anything at all to worry about. It's a lot of talk. There are people out there who call themselves investors. What they really are is speculators. They actually thrive on market pullbacks like this because they make money on the simple technique of playing the volatility of the market. Since the election day of 2016, this market has lacked volatility for most of the time. Not all of it, but most of it. And therefore, once in a while, they have to kind of get together and say, well, we need to create some volatility. And it seems to be maybe one of the reasons, you've all heard me say, there are weeks where all news is good news, there are weeks where all news is bad news, and there are weeks where news is what it is. And you can create that hype with a bunch of people saying that all the same things. Like I said, I don't think there's anything right now going on that's much to worry about, but we are going to spend a little time talking about tariffs today for a couple of reasons. Things are playing out in the administration pretty much according to plan, and it's being largely overlooked by the public, especially the anti-Trump media, which doesn't have any kind of a positive stake in the outcome of this thing. So we'll get into that a little bit and some other kind of fun things to talk about today. We never lack for a topic, but again, we'll invite anybody who has a question to call in and talk about it. We will have a trivia question. I'll give it out after the first break. And who knows where we'll go from here today. It's one of these days when my stack of papers is so tall, I don't know which stack to go through. So let's start by saying four straight weeks down on the Dow, two straight weeks down on the other indices. What does it all mean?
Nothing really.
You're as excited as I am, I can tell.
If we could just back out Monday from the week, it actually was a pretty nice week. Unfortunately,
well, I'll tell you what. I promise one thing. I'll do that for you next week.
Okay. Next week?
Back out Monday.
Or the week after.
You know, we've had this discussion all week at home. Is next week the one that starts tomorrow? Or is it the one that starts a week from?
No. Next week is this coming week.
That's what I said. And I said next week, which means Memorial Day. Well, you've on Memorial Day, I'm going to let you get by a whole market week without a Monday in it.
Okay, it's still Saturday, so this week, meaning the week that just passed. But this argument is senseless. So
I know, but it's ongoing.
Anyways, the ongoing trade drama caused the market to drop about 2.5% on Monday, and then it rallied for three straight days, only to drop again on Friday marginally and end the week with a little loss. The Dow and the S&P both ended up down less than 1%, while the NASDAQ was down just 1.3%. Interestingly, for the second straight week, small and mid-cap stocks were hit the hardest. This is really odd considering the trade war is what's kind of driving the market down. Typically, large caps have more international exposure and get hit harder when the problem in the market has to do with international trade. So that's a really interesting dynamic that I really can't explain why that is right now.
Nor can I.
It's unusual.
It is counterintuitive.
Yeah. So utilities and consumer staples held up the best. In fact, they both went up for the week, which they're both defensive categories. So you can kind of tell what people were thinking as far as that. Let's get out of the cyclical and the anything that has more risk and get into less risk companies.
You saw what happened to the market sentiment, the bull-bear ratio.
Yeah, for sure. I'll get to that in a minute.
I figured you would.
Financials and industrials marked the biggest declines. Internationally, Brazil got absolutely crushed this week to the tune of more than 8%. Well, the rest of the international indexes they either showed modest gains or modest losses. It was kind of a similar to our market this week. However, the emerging market index, which is heavily weighted towards Brazil, posted losses around 4%. But that was all really driven by Brazil. Commodities fared a lot better, with the index gaining over 1.3%. Oil climbed almost 2%, so that always affects it to a wide degree. Gold and silver were both down marginally. With stocks declining, the fixed income market perked up. When you see utilities, consumer staples, and fixed income perk up, you know people are just rushing to safety. That's what it is. Long treasuries gained just under 1%, and the total bond market added about 30 basis points.
And what does that cause? When bonds are being bought, so the prices are coming up, causes interest rates to go down.
Right.
And mortgage rates just hit a 10-year low.
Crazy.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Don't be crazy and ignore it, though, if you're thinking of buying a refinance.
A 10-year low? I don't think that's correct.
What I read this morning.
No. Mortgage rates were down around 3 1/3 last year.
Okay.
2 years
It's a little bit. Somebody was misleading a little bit. My point is they're well under 4.
Yeah.
Historically, that's a 3.7, 3.8 you can get now. And I got my 3.8 rate in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. You can get the same rate today. And how many Fed increases have we had in that time?
Several.
It's crazy, isn't it?
That is unusual.
That's unlinked from reality to a degree.
No doubt about it. The economic data this week was mixed, as it has been lately, with some highlights and some lowlights. Some of the highlights included small business optimism coming in higher than expected for the first time in a while, and initial jobless claims dropping back down to the 212,000 range from 230,000.
That was a biggie.
Almost every housing-related report this week was positive as well, so that's an interesting dynamic. The housing was really soft over the sort of Christmas holiday time, and now it seems to be bouncing back a little bit. And a lot of that has to do with what we were just talking about with the mortgage rates coming down.
Home builder sentiment is rising sharply, too.
Yep. Some of the lowlights of the week included retail sales and industrial production missing forecast. And last week we talked about student loan debt, and this week we saw student loan debt climbing at 5.6% year over year, which sounds large until you realize that it's actually one of the lowest rates we've seen since 2004. And in fact, the growth rate in student loan debt is on a really clear downward trend and has been since that time. So it's still growing, but it's growing at a much slower rate than it was 10, 15 years ago.
I thought the most interesting part of the world news this week was the difference between Europe and Asia. Europe is actually showing a lot of signs of life,
mm-hmm.
and the Asian economies are not.
I have a whole thing on that. We can get to that after the break.
We're going to do that because we're going to be talking partly about tariffs and see if we caused any of this sensation, which I think we did. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Lee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Lee.
And I'm Adam Van Lee.
And we have a trivia question for this week, brought to you, as usual, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. Call Ken at 904-636-7888. One of the things we work with quite a bit is estate planning, which, as you know, involves what you want done with your assets when you are no longer here to spend them down. Sometimes people inherit assets and use them in a very good manner to to improve their own lifestyles later on. Sometimes they don't. What percentage of inheritances are squandered away shortly after receipt? Now, that doesn't mean inherited dollars. Actual inheritances, the number of them, what percentage of actual inheritances are squandered by the recipient on average? I'll take it within 2% one way or the other. All right, wrapping up the market. We had talked about jobless claims and all those wonderful things being good. Overall, economic numbers are, I thought, just a little bit confusing, because there are things that look to me like they're not as good as they should be. But I know some of it was weather-related, too.
I don't know. I mean, it's been kind of the trend lately to see half good, half bad.
Yeah.
And by bad, it just means missing the estimate.
Yeah,
so
true.
It all depends on the quality of your estimates. But you did mention the bullish sentiment. It fell to under 30%. It was over 40%.
My notes say bullish sentiment fell. Yay!
That's weird. I have the same thing. And then bearish sentiment climbed to just under 40% from 23%. So if you ever listen to the show, you will know that we love when this happens because investors are almost never right.
Yeah,
so
my notes say bearish sentiment spiked. Double yay.
Yep. It's
More people who dislike this market, the better we like it.
Yep. No doubt about it. So let's talk a little bit about China and trade and what's happening in China. If you looked at some of the data there this week, you would see that industrial production in China has declined from an 8.5% growth rate to a 5.4% growth rate. So, well, 5.4% is something that America would love to see and probably won't see. It is terrible for an emerging market like China. They are historically running a lot hotter than that. And if you look, I mean, just recently at 8.5%, and I know it's been higher than that.
Yeah, that was down to 8.5.
Right. So that is a very, very negative sign for China. The retail sales growth rate is also slowing, and it is only, quote unquote, growing at 7.2% right now, which is still an incredible number. But again, an emerging market, that is the lowest rate they've seen since 2003. Bad news. One of the main drivers of that slowdown in the retail sales growth rate is auto sales, which is actually down 2.1% year over year. So they sold 2.1% less in terms of revenue on automobiles than they did last year. Now, in a growing market like China, that should never happen. There's just too many people who are coming in from the fields, moving into cities, becoming consumers, getting jobs, making actual money instead of working for the family farm. And all of those people are buying cars. So the fact that they are selling less cars than they did a year ago, that's a really bad sign.
It is indeed.
I think that, needless to say, the tariffs are not going to destroy China's economy. In fact, their output to us, their exports to us, make up a very small percentage of their GDP at this point. It used to be quite large, I think over 10%, but now it's well under that, well under 5% actually. And so, yes, they're going to hurt a little bit, but they're not going to destroy them. But it will send a pretty clear signal. So we'll see if it works.
I think there's a lot of things in play right now that are showing themselves to work, to have worked. And one of the things that caught my eye, I'll get to right after this.
Okay.
Because, good morning, Pat.
How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm fine.
What's happening today?
I'm in Dallas right now, but I
really?
Live in Lake City. Yeah.
Well, you get the longest phone call of the day so far.
And we were at a family wedding, so cool. We had a lot of fun yesterday.
So. Oh, great.
Nice.
What's happening?
Not much. I want to try my hand at the trivia question.
Okay.
70%.
I understand your sentiment completely, but you are a little high.
Well,
I know. That's a pleasant surprise to all of us, I think.
Okay.
I would have expected it, before I knew the answer to this, I would have expected that it was even more than that based on people's goofy behavior when they get some found money. But it actually is not quite that bad. So you've bracketed.
Okay.
Yep, absolutely. Well, you guys have a good time and a safe trip home.
Okay, thanks, and we'll call again next time.
All right, take care. Less than 70 is squandered. That's I would be curious for a numerical breakdown in that thing, but I don't have it. So
yeah, I would have. I probably wouldn't have gone that high, just because. And the only reason is that a lot of people don't inherit money until they're older, because people live a long time these days.
Point.
And you know, once you're older and established, you're less likely to squander it than a 21-year-old who inherits.
Excellent observation.
So, anyways, all right, what's next?
All right, I was about to say China has some other things going on. So the headline for the week: Xi slams foolish Trump administration efforts as China slashes U.S. bond holdings. One of the big fears that everybody in the media seems to have is that China doesn't really need us as much as we need them. It's they buy our debt, right? Well, it doesn't seem to be going so well just having some tariffs on them. And I explained last week how they're manipulating their currency to make their exports cheaper, which is helping pad the blow here. And I'm going to talk about a lot more about this in a minute. But they slashed their bond holding, according to Money and Markets headline writer. They sold $20.5 billion worth of U.S. Treasury holdings in March. That's a lot of money.
It is.
I would mostly admit. But then again, they hold a lot of money. So it was, if I told you a fraction of a tenth of a percent, would you believe it?
Yeah.
So if that's what they're going to do to retaliate, I'm not going to stay awake at night and worry about it.
Well, it doesn't seem like the Treasury market cared very much about that.
Yeah, it doesn't, does it? There are plenty of people willing to buy them. So 0.057%, and I'm not going to lose any sleep, as I said. China does not depend on us one way or the other, more or less, except in the eyes of the beholder. We are indelibly etched in stone as partners in a lot of things, whether anybody on either side likes it or not. And you will, I still believe, see a resolution of the two that's going to be good for everybody in the long run. Now, you might remember, this is going to take us through the break, I think, but you might remember last week when Chuck called. Chuck's one of our wonderful frequent callers who is very thoughtful. He was upset with Trump, and certainly can't blame anybody for that.
Fair enough.
With the imposition of the tariffs, and his example was that when you go in to buy a $150 bicycle at Walmart, it's now $175 because of the tariff. And I said, you know, I'm not really that concerned about it, and I want to explain that a little bit. I don't feel like I really explained myself as well as I wanted to last week. So here's a little background on the whole process. A tariff is, what's another word for a tariff? Tax. That's all. Is imposed on a country as a sanction for not being willing to make a free and fair trade agreement with us. The tariff is collected on the goods at import to the USA. That tariff money is collected by our government, and it is sent to the Customs and Border Patrol people. That's where the imposition of tariffs funds the customs people. I don't know if everybody knows that. But then what happens? The products hit the shelf. Well, first let me say that makes Trump correct in what he said. He said money pouring into the coffers of the U.S. government. That's true. But now those products go onto the shelf, and it doesn't say day-to-day price plus add this for the tariff. The only thing that happens is it hits the shelf, and the price is higher than it used to be. And Chuck and many other people are arguing that the other country does not pay the tariff. We do. So I wanted to take a look at that. Who pays taxes? That's the big question. The American taxpayer is the simple answer.
That's the only answer. Yep. Companies do not pay taxes.
Nope.
No matter what you think,
nope.
They
no
don't.
No corporation has ever paid a tax, period.
And why is that?
Because taxes are built into the price and passed on to the ultimate consumer who pays the taxes when they buy the product. Similarly, no foreign company or no foreign corporation or government has ever paid a tax to us. It is passed on to the consumer. It is not, however, called a tax at the point of purchase. Instead, a tariff-type tax is embedded in the price at time of import. Now, after the break, I'm going to carry this on a little bit more and see what it really means and what's really going on behind the scenes. Why are there tariffs? Why haven't they worked before? What are we using them for? And the biggest question of all, are they working according to plan? And I'm going to make my best argument that they're working precisely according to plan. And there's a lot of evidence that came up this week to support my opinion. So we'll get a little deeper dive after the break and talk about this and anything else. Lines are open. Give us a call. We'll be right back to the Van Lee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Lee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Lee.
And I'm Adam Van Lee.
And we have our trivia question still open. What percentage of inheritances are squandered rather abruptly rather than being placed toward a longer-term use by the offspring or whatever? And we know that it's under 68 because we had a 70 guess and I was taking plus or minus 2. We know that it's over 0 just because you're alive, aren't you? Of course you know that. Everybody knows that. All right, back to tariffs and what's going on in China especially. There are tariffs built into the cost of almost all foreign goods we purchase. If you remember back about the election time when tariffs first started to be discussed, I did a segment on tariffs and how and trade deals and how people don't understand how many are actually there and how much of a part of our day-to-day living these are. So I made a small list, and I'm just going to pick some highlights from the list. These are in existence, quote, trade deals, which means tariff rate quotas and all that. We have deals with Australia, Bahrain, the Caribbean Basin, U.S. Central America, Dominican Republic, Chile, Haiti, Israel, Morocco, Oman, Peru, Panama, Colombia, Korea. And that was just the tip of the iceberg. And they apply to such goods as worsted wool fabrics, cotton shirting fabrics, brooms, whisk brooms, cotton shirts, fabric, chocolate, milk, cream, sugar, avocados, peanuts, tobacco, T-shirts, ice cream, hotel, restaurant, kitchenware, beef, tomato sauces, specialty sugar, and the list goes on forever and ever and ever. So there's nothing unique about what we're doing with the tariffs. But what just happened this week? Did anybody notice that sort of quietly, not totally quietly, but sort of, it seems that tariffs got lifted on steel and aluminum from Canada and Mexico?
That happened on Friday.
Yeah. Now, what does that mean for everybody? Well, A, less expensive products for the U.S., right? No more tariffs, cheaper prices. But much more importantly than that, this was one of the steps in implementing the new NAFTA replacement, the USMCA, United States, Mexico, Canada agreement. That cannot be placed into action until we get rid of some of these little side spats, which are not part of the deal. Well, that one happened, and I don't know how many people actually paid much attention to it. But the important thing about the new NAFTA, the USMCA, is that it's not law until Congress says it's law. But you know what's happening in Congress. If Trump says it, it's wrong. If he favors it, they don't like it, on and on and on. And I wish I were only talking about the Democratic-controlled House. He gets an awful lot of blowback from Republicans in the Senate also. But I think if this one ever had a chance, if any trade agreement ever had a real good shot at getting passed, you're going to see this one because this is the most direct result on the workers in this country. When you see your job go to Mexico, you know your job went to Mexico. It's not going to some little Timbuktu in a continent halfway around the world. It's going across the border to Mexico. That's it. Same thing with Canada Why can't we export certain things to Canada when they can export them here? Well, that's what this is all about. Now, I'm going to tell you a little story that's kind of being told on me. But many years ago, when I first got into radio, it was probably 03 or so, and we got a caller. It was on a different station on a different show, but I remember it like it was yesterday. It was a young guy, and he was very upset with NAFTA. And he told us that NAFTA was a terrible deal, and it was stealing jobs and all that stuff. And I made a very impassioned argument to tell him how wrong he was, because millions of jobs had been created in the U.S. after NAFTA. Well, my data was exactly right. But let's dig a little bit. What did it really mean? NAFTA went into effect on January 1 of 1994. By 1999, millions of jobs have been created, and the media will never let you forget it, because that was during the Clinton administration. And the Clinton administration is noted for their wonderful economy by anyone who tries to convince you that it was Clinton that did it. Well, what happened? Clinton got in to the White House and raised your taxes. Now, does electing a Democrat cause an economic boom? No. Does raising your taxes cause an economic boom? No. And there's more on this to come. What happened during the 90s? Well, you might remember it under various names, but I would call it the dot-com boom.
Well, I would actually, yes, that's correct, but it was actually the internet.
That's exactly
expansion
right.
of the use and available uses of the internet.
Mm-hmm. In 1994, when NAFTA was passed, you did not have the internet in your home.
No,
most people did not. I would virtually guarantee it. Well, pretty soon, you've got mail became a commonly heard thing, along with those ring, ding, 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 noises that you remember from dialing up the AOL.
The modem noises, sure.
And you were paying money for a year subscription to Netscape and things like that.
Prodigy,
yep. Well, all that stuff started developing according to Moore's Law, which says technology basically doubles every 18 months or so. And pretty soon, it wasn't, do you have an email account? It was, what's your email address?
Mm-hmm.
And that happened in the relative blink of an eye.
It really did. So this was right during my formative years. I went to college mm-hmm. in 1994, and they gave us an email address, but you had to find a real technology savvy freshman in the dorm room next door, like I did, to be able to access it for you. And then by the time I graduated, it was standard at my first job that everyone
couldn't
had an
get
email
along
address
without it.
And got Outlook, and it was just the way business was done. That was in 4 years.
I think the first email your mother got was you.
Maybe so.
We were just kind of blown away like everybody else was, and it had every computer that Apple ever made by then, because I started my life in computers and they didn't scare me. But anyway, we got that, and then other people got it, and pretty soon it became easier and easier and faster and so on and so forth. Well, these startup companies were everywhere, and venture capital was everywhere starting them up. Pretty soon they were getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and of course the stock market, particularly the NASDAQ, was going absolutely bonkers.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was buying the NASDAQ. Tom Brokaw went on the news tonight, and NASDAQ broke another 1,000-point barrier today, you know, on and on and on. And it soon became pretty obvious that a lot of these things were not viable. They weren't making any money. So a term was invented that I'll never forget. It was called burn rate. The burn rate was the pace at which a company was using up its money. When a company runs out of money and doesn't have a source of replacing that money, what do you suppose is going to happen?
They go and get more money.
And when nobody will give them any money, then what happens?
Then they go bankrupt.
That's right. Well, on or about March 15th, 2000, guess what happened? The whole thing started down, and it never looked back. and companies were going belly up as fast as they used to be started. That led to a less than stellar performance in the market in 2000, to say the least. Many, many people were completely wiped out. I remember one of the oldest expressions I heard back in the 90s was, I'm fully diversified. I've got 50 different tech stocks. Well, guess what? Chart them all together, you might as well only have one chart. There were some survivors. People like Intel have survived. The NASDAQ today at its 7,000 to 8,000 level is higher than it ever got back then.
Mm-hmm.
But it's based on profits and as well as concepts and so on. It's a completely different NASDAQ. Bottom line, when George W. Bush came in, Clinton handed over to Bush a recession. And you'll always note when anybody talks about the Bush years in the economy that that period of time was exactly 7 years. No one will ever talk about the year 2000 when it all came tumbling down.
You said Bush, but you meant Clinton.
Thank you. Yes, under Clinton. And I'll wrap this up a little bit right after the break, but I thought it was important to refresh the story so you know where I'm going and coming from. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
I'm going to wrap this up, and I want to wrap it up by saying, in retrospect, I was wrong about NAFTA. I was the original free trader. Let every country do what that country does best, and everybody's better off for it. What we didn't know, when we import and when we export, if there are tariffs, why aren't they equal tariffs? 25%, 2.5%. Huh, how do you compete? Now that we know the truth about NAFTA and many of these other trade agreements, I understand completely why all this is being done, and I hope everybody else does too. The ultimate goal, as we said last week, is a world where the appropriate and only tariffs ever are zero, but it has to be coupled with one more thing. Governments cannot subsidize those businesses that are exporting in order to make it look like their products are cheaper.
Right.
And that's what China has been doing for a long, long time. So call me a Renaissance man, I guess. I woke up to the real truth about the matter, which no one used to report, and now they do, and I thank them. Right, I'm going to turn it over to Adam, but I want to bring you up to date on one more thing. Required minimum distributions. You know there are a couple proposals that are going through Congress. One of them is called RESA, and one of them is called SECURE, that they're going to raise, they're trying to raise the required minimum distribution age on IRAs to 72. Well, there's a new one from Ben Cardin and Rob Portman that is, they're trying to get it to 75. Now, it would be phased in, which probably leaves me behind, but their point is good. I would like to see that happen because having people be able to postpone their money till later in life will help all of them live better in the long run, which is what the government supposedly wants. Of course, they're always fighting themselves because they want your money sooner, and that's going to be a tough call for all of them. But with a little luck, some of this will get done, and there's a couple other good provisions in it too, but that's for another day. All right, carry on. Oh, one more quick thing. This segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Call Troy at 662-9794 if you're tired of doing it yourself.
All right. So a few weeks ago, I talked about the worst jobs in America. What if I told you that there is a job where the average pay is $108,000 a year, and it has high job satisfaction and has enough job openings that it's a real possibility to land one of those jobs?
Is that welfare in Ohio?
No. Oh, okay. It's actually kind of the opposite of that. You do need a degree to pursue this job, but if you are entering school, it's something you should seriously consider. It is a data scientist. They are, It's number one on Glassdoor's best jobs in America for 2019 for the fourth straight year.
Do they fall under mining jobs?
No. Okay. Tech jobs, most likely. So the median, sorry, I said average, but it's the median base annual salary of $108,000. And there are signs that growth in that salary has been leveling off, but it is still growing. So That's pretty crazy. Number two was in best jobs was a nurse manager, $83,000 median. Marketing manager is number three at $82,000. And occupational therapist at number four for $74,000. And last, product managers at number five, $115,000. So last week we were talking about how to pay for college. Pursuing any of these careers would probably pay off. Hint, hint.
Huh.
Yeah, not bad. And speaking of companies that pay well, who always gets bashed when we talk about, oh, sure, Trump is creating a lot of jobs, but they're not good jobs.
Yeah.
What's the number one company that always gets targeted when this subject comes up?
McDonald's.
No, oh. Walmart.
Oh,
Walmart.
Okay, yeah.
They draw the ire of everybody because they're the nation's largest employer. So they're the obvious target. Well, they just issued a new report a couple of weeks ago. And guess how much it pays to be a U.S. store manager at Walmart?
Minimum wage?
Hardly. $175,000 a year. Now, they earn it. That is a tough, tough job. I've worked in the retail industry before for a company similar to Walmart, and it is a tough job. Those people, men and women, they work all the time. And it is just a constant battle. You're babysitting your employees. You're worrying about stocking levels. You're running a fairly large business. So they really earn it, but $175,000 a year. And the average wage for a full-time hourly worker at Walmart is $14.26 per hour. And that is well above, almost double, the federal minimum wage of $7.25. So if you hear people saying that, oh, Walmart doesn't pay their employees well enough, I would beg to differ.
Huh.
Yeah.
And why isn't that better known?
I don't know. Maybe their PR people maybe they're working too hard to come out and put that out in the media.
And from a mass distribution of knowledge standpoint, it doesn't fit the narrative of the mainstream media.
No, and just remember that a few weeks ago, I think it's less than 2% of all workers make minimum wage. So this whole argument, you're arguing about less than 2% of people who are probably just starting their careers. It's just a non-issue.
Well, I'll tell you one thing for absolute certain. You will never be a manager at a Walmart unless you start some job, whether it's at Walmart or McDonald's or whatever, at a very low level.
Exactly.
Even if you have a college degree in management, you're still going to start out not making a lot of money.
No doubt about it.
You don't go college 175, although a lot of people would really like that, but ain't happening.
Now, there are programs where if you go to college and then go into the military, that some companies will hire you as a store manager or an assistant store manager.
But see the unemployment rate among military, ex-military?
I have not.
I think it's 3.7.
That's got to be near an all-time low.
It's got to be. I was shocked when the last numbers came out for the unemployment rate. That was one of them. There have been a lot of companies like Home Depot who have been stressing hiring military people.
That's the one that has the program where you can go that I know of. I know there's others, but I know they will hire ex-military to.
Imagine that. A few people started talking about this a few years ago, how it was difficult for these people to assimilate back in. And a couple people jumped on the bandwagon, and it's been kind of a slowly developing process. It worked.
Yeah. It's funny. I've been talking to a lot of small business owners lately who are actually looking to hire veterans. So it's definitely a trend that I've noticed.
Huh. Cool.
I don't know why not. The military training, how would that not benefit you? I mean,
can't imagine.
Seems to make sense.
Yeah. All right. Economics question. What happens to the government when they lower income tax rates?
What happens to the government or what happens to
their revenues?
Oh, it generally goes up.
Huh. Who knew? Kennedy, Bush, Reagan, every time. Headline, revenues hit record high in April. Duh. Guess what? According to the latest monthly report from the CBO, revenues in April totaled $515 billion, which is a 13% increase over last April and an all-time high for the month. Now, April is a very good month to use for this because that's when the rubber hits the road, meaning your taxes are due. Now, with a lesser rate and broader brackets, you would expect that tax revenues would be down because that's what we were told was going to happen, right? Guess what?
Didn't work out
didn't
that way.
Happen. And it never, ever does. Now, that's half of a success equation. The other half would be don't spend any more money than you spent last year, and this would be helpful toward getting back to a balanced budget. And when I'm done laughing about that, then I'll give you the answer to the trivia question because Congress can't take it. They are spendingly incontinent people, if I might. They cannot help themselves. They get an extra dollar, they spend $1.50 or $2. It's, again, always been that way also.
As high as our debt level is, our deficit level is, as a percentage of our GDP, it's actually half of what it was in 2010 and 2011.
Huh. So, yeah. Is it sustainable? Next week, I'm going to tell you that we're all looking at this debt thing the exact wrong way, and I can prove it to you. All right, half of all inheritances are basically squandered in a very short time, and I would rather be the last half-full person on this one and say half of inheritances are actually put toward good uses such as future retirement for the people who inherited the money. People like us and our day jobs can help you do that. If you're finding out you're going to get an inheritance, you can call us there. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour.